to order, please. Will members please vote to signify their presence in the chambers this morning?
Senator Zara.
The roll shows 18 members present this morning.
The two co-chairmen of finance are missing. No one's excused. We do have a quorum present. This morning's chaplain is Senator Coghill. Will all please rise for the invocation?
Shall we pray? O Lord, heavenly creator, who has filled the world with beauty, open our eyes to behold your gracious hand in all your works, that rejoicing in your whole creation, we may learn to serve you with gladness and take seriously our call to be co-creators with you. As we rush to close down the 15th session of the Alaska Legislature, let us not leave undone those issues which need our attention. Almighty God, send down upon this legislature the spirit of wisdom and charity and justice, that filled with creativity and steadfast purpose, we may faithfully serve the people of this great state as we do their will in these last days of this session. This we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Senator Abood, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have certification of the journal, please?
I wish to certify as the correctness of the journals for the 111th day and 112th day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 111th and 112th legislative days be approved as certified.
Without objection, the journals for the 111th and 112th legislative days have been approved by the State Senate as certified by the Senate Secretary. Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread in the journal.
Without objection, this morning's prayer will be spread on the journal. Do we have introduction of guests? Senator Curtula.
President, the Senate gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce my daughter, Anne.
Further introduction of guests. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor this morning.
Do we have messages from the House of Representatives?
Message dated April 30, the House has passed Senate Bill number 315, an act relating to third-party reimbursement for advanced nurse practitioner services and return. This has been sent to enrolling. Message of May 2, 1988, Dear Madam President, the House has failed to receive in the House amendments to CS for Senate Bill number 322, LNC, an act relating to workers' compensation and providing for an effective date, namely House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 322 Judiciary. The Speaker has appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with the Light Committee from the Senate to consider the bills. Representative Sun, Chairman, Representative Navarre, Representative Menard. The Senate appointed members April 30, Senator Kelly, Chairman, Senator Fakes, and Senator Szymanski. Message of May 2nd, Dear Madam President, the House has failed to receive in the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill number 56, Judiciary, an act amending and making effective an annuity program and amendments to the longevity bonus program and the permanent fund dividend program provided for in sections 2 through 18, Chapter 99, SLA 1985, providing for an effective date, namely House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 56, Finance Amended House. The Speaker has appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with the Light Committee from the Senate to consider the bills. Representative Ulmer, Chairman, Representative Porchot, Representative Rieger. The Senate members were appointed April 30, Senator Curtula, Chairman, Senator Eliason, and Senator Ewing. Message of April 30, 1988, the House has passed Senate Bill number 264, an act relating to the practice of chiropractic and providing for an effective date with the following amendment, House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 264, Hess, amended House, and transmitted for consideration.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I move that the Senate concur in the House amendments to Senate Bill 264 and thus adopting House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 264 Hess amended by the House.
Is there any discussion? Senator Josephson.
I support this motion and the House version. I think essentially the changes are technical. There were some accommodations made to the medical profession, particularly with regard to school examinations, to assure that a chiropractor doing a school examination would be concentrating on the areas that were that are within the chiropractor's expertise and not medical questions. I think the House has done a good job, and I hope the bill will be concurred.
Is there further discussion?
Question.
You ready for the concurrence vote? The question being, shall the Senate concur in the House amendments, thus adopting House CS for Senate Bill 264 Hess, amended House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary may record the vote. The Senate has concurred in the House amendments, thus adopting the House CS for Senate Bill 264 Hess, amended House, by a vote of 19 yeas with one unexcused absence. Mr. Majority Leader.
And ask unanimous consent that the vote on the passage of the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 264 Hess, amended by the House, be considered the vote on effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call vote on the final passage of the House CS for Senate Bill 264 Hess, amended House, will be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause. Madam Secretary, are there additional messages from the House of Representatives?
Message dated April 30. Dear Madam President, the House has passed committee substitute for Senate Bill number 432 Finance with the following amendment. House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill number 432 Finance. An act making appropriations for the operating expenses of state government and providing for an effective date and transmitting for consideration. In the event the Senate does not concur in the House amendments, the Speaker has appointed the following members to a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the Senate to consider the bills. Representative Adams, Chairman, Representative Porchot, and Representative Frank.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, of course, this is the House's version of the operating budget. So I move that the Senate concur in the House amendments to committee substitute for Senate Bill 432 Finance and request the body to vote no.
Is there any discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the Senate concur in the House amendments to Senate Bill 432, thus adopting the House CS for Senate Bill 432 Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary may record the vote. The Senate has failed to adopt the House amendments by a vote of 2 yeas, 17 nays, 1 unexcused absence. Madam Secretary, you notify the House, please. If the House does not recede from their amendments, I will be appointing the following conference committee: Senator Binkley, Chairman, Senator Halford, and Senator Jones. Are there further messages from the House of Representatives?
Message dated May 2nd. Dear Madam President, the House has passed and transmitted for consideration committee substitute for House Bill number 430, Finance, by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Establishing the Alaska Neighborhood Revitalization Initiative and Providing for an Effective Date.
This has been requested by the Labor and Commerce Chairman. It will have a Labor and Commerce referral and a Finance referral on House Bill 430.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 431, Finance, amended, by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Making an Appropriation to the Neighborhood Vitalization and Development Fund and Providing for an Effective Date.
Labor and Commerce, Finance.
Those are the messages from the House this morning, Madam President.
Brings us to communications.
There are no communications this morning.
Brings us to reports of standing committees.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 210, Geographic Pay Differentials and Providing for an Effective Date, and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill number 210, Finance, and reports it back as follows. Senator Halford, co-chairman, and Senators Duncan and Ewing signed to pass. Senators Jara, Fisher, Hensley, and Binkley signed. No recommendation. There is a new zero fiscal note attached. Senate Bill number 210 has no further referral.
A rules committee, please, for consideration counter.
The Judiciary Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill number 217, Finance, Purchase of Investments, by the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Permanent Fund. Reports it back as follows. Senator Kurtula, chairman, signed. No recommendation. Senators Sturgiluski and Josephson signed. Do pass. Committee substitute for House Bill number 217, Finance, has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill 500, exempting certain interests in low-income housing from municipal taxation effective date, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill number 500 Rules with a new title, a new zero fiscal note, and calendar. The report was signed by Senator Eliason, Chairman, concurring Senators Hensley, Binkley, Fakes, and Jones. Senate Bill 500 is on today's calendar. The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill number 515, foreclosure of a deed of trust or a suit on a deed of trust note and providing for an effective date, recommends it be calendared, and considered Senate Bill number 411, use of firearms in state parks, state marine parks, state wildlife preserves, and state recreation areas and recommended calendar. The reports were signed by Senator Elias and Chairman, concurring Senators Hensley, Binkley, Fakes, and Jones. These bills are on today's calendar. Those are the standing committee reports this morning, Madam President.
Do we have reports of special committees, please?
There are no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
Senate Concurrent Resolution number 66 by the Judiciary Committee recognizing Wasilla as the home of the Iditarod.
Will the Senate stand at ease, please? We'll come back to order. Senate will come back to order. We are under introduction of Senate resolutions. The Senate Secretary said Senate Concurrent Resolution number 66 will go to the State Affairs Committee.
Senate Joint Resolution number 70 by the Judiciary Committee relating to disposition of the Cordova Federal Building.
State Affairs, Finance.
Those are the resolutions for introduction this morning.
Brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar.
Senate Bill number 500 by the Committee on Regional Affairs Committee, an act exempting certain interests in low-income housing from municipal taxation and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Regional Affairs Committee considers the bill and reports it back as follows. Senator Strzelewski, Chairman, and Senator Zaroff signed do pass. Senator Kelly signed do not pass unless amended. Fiscal note attached. Finance Committee waived. The Rules Committee considers the bill and recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 500 Rules, new title, zero fiscal note and calendar. The report was signed by Senator Eliason, Chairman, concurring Senators Eliason, Hensley, Binkley, Fakes, and Jones. The rules see us.
Senator Eliason.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Rules Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 500 be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Note the title change.
Any objections? Without objection, the Rules Committee substitute for Senate Bill 500 has been adopted in lieu of the original bill with a title change.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 500 rules by the Rules Committee, an act relating to an exemption from municipal taxation for certain interests in federally funded low-income housing and providing for an effective date.
Discussion. Are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 500 rules be considered engrossed. Advance the third reading and place in final passage.
Without objection, the Rules Committee CS for Senate Bill 500 is before the Senate in final passage. Madam Secretary, read the bill.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 500 rules, an act relating to an exemption from municipal taxation for certain interests in federally funded low-income housing and providing for an effective date.
Discussion. Senator Strzelewski.
Yes, just very briefly on this. It's a bill that's kind of laid into the system, but in my opinion, it's vital that it does pass this session. Just briefly, the Alaska State Building Authority and the Native Regional Housing Authorities, which are throughout the state, including the municipal centers, receive federal funds for the provision of low-income housing. To date, they've provided something like $645 million total invested, and this legislation doesn't pass, it might have ramification on those dollars and certainly in any future program. But what this bill is going to do is to allow the continuation of federal funding for low-income housing in Alaska municipalities. And what happens here that both of the programs, or the programs that exist now, transfer ownership to residents who live in a house for a designated number of years, about 25 years, and during that time, they pay a monthly sum that's determined by their income. And while living in the houses, they build up a slight, a possessory interest. And what this whole thing is about is whether or not you can levy property tax against that possessory interest. Federal law states that if that interest is taxed, federal funds will be withdrawn. So we're talking about lots and lots of money. Municipalities have traditionally, in the past, signed agreements with the housing authorities that exempt those interests from taxation. There have been kind of a series of AG's opinions, first saying that you could not tax those. Then recently they have a draft one out saying that unless we pass legislation that, as a matter of fact, those possessory interests would be taxed. If that happens, we're simply not going to see any federal funds come in for housing. It's a very serious issue. The possessory interest is a very small amount. The federal government does pay in lieu of taxes on their portion, and those amount to more dollars than this possessory interest would be if it's taxed. There were some questions raised on this bill when it was in Community and Regional Affairs about making this a mandatory program. What we have done by adopting the Rules Committee position is to allow it to be optional on the part of a municipality. In other words, if they're convinced that they don't, that they would, say, want to tax that possessory interest and not get into federal funds for housing, they can make that decision. So this leaves it up to the municipalities, and I think it's very important that I would urge your support so that we can have continuation of federal income for low-income housing in our cities and boroughs.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. The question being, shall the rule CS for Senate Bill 500 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Any member fail to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary may record the vote. CS for Senate Bill 500 rules has passed the Senate by a vote of 19 yeas, one unexcused absence. Mr. Majority Leader.
I ask unanimous consent that the vote on the passage of committee substitute for Senate Bill 500 rules be considered a vote on effective date clause.
Without objection, the rule CS for Senate Bill 500 will be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Senate Bill number 515 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to foreclosure of a deed of trust or a suit on a deed of trust note and providing for an effective date. The Judiciary Committee considers the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill 515 Judiciary and due pass. Report was signed by Senator Kutula, Chairman, concurring Senators Justison, Rohde, Strzelczyk, and Fake. Zero fiscal note attached. Rules Committee considers the bill and recommends calendar. And report was signed by Senator Elias and Chairman, concurring Senators Hensley, Finkley, Fakes, and Jones. As a Judiciary Committee substitute.
Senator Kutula.
Mr. Senate, I would move the Judiciary Committee substitute. There are a number of people on the floor that may wish to speak to this bill and can do so. It is an attempt, and I'll just be very brief, and you have the basic materials on your desk. In very simplistic terms, Senate Bill 515 will aid debtors so that if a creditor chooses to utilize judicial foreclosure against them, and the creditor obtains the judgment, then the creditor will be precluded from using non-judicial foreclosure to recover the security of the debt. We thought that was the law before the Moaning versus Alaska Mutual Bank case, which has been decided in the courts. Again, I recommend adoption of committee substitutes. The best we can do. We wish to do more, but it's the best we could do.
Without objection, the Judiciary's committee substitute for Senate Bill 515 has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Senator Farrington.
We have brief of these.
Senate will stand at ease. Senate will come back to order. I don't know what's outside. Jeez. Okay. We've adopted the Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 515. I'm going to ask the Senate Secretary, are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, before we advance it, I would like to get brief explanation of what the bill does.
Senator
Rohde. Mr. President, if the chair would allow me the authority to explain what the law was, what the court decision did, and what changes
please.
We are proposing today. For many years in Alaska, there has been a method of financing property by using a deed of trust, as the senator is familiar. It has been presumed by certainly most purchasers and a great many lawyers that whoever financed that had two ways to deal with the problem in the event that there wasn't payment. They could foreclose on the deed of trust, and there were provisions there to do that quickly. Or they could, but all you get is the property back. Or they could go to court and sue on the deed of trust and have what's called a judicial foreclosure. It takes more time, but you only get the property back. But if the person owes you additional money, the property is insufficient to cover the debt, then you get whatever additional money might be owed you, and you can get a money judgment in addition to the property. This was changed by two court cases, one called Conrad v. Counselors Investment, the other called Manning versus Alaska Mutual Bank. I have the court cases here. They came down a month and a half ago. They, and the court cases are correct in interpreting our statute. They said that the person who finances property has an option. They can sue on the note, get the money from the person who owes it, and then go after the property secondarily. This caused a great ripple through Alaska because it put in a very disadvantageous position many Alaskans who were already feeling the pinch of tough times. I have to say that the Supreme Court did probably interpret, did in my opinion, and the opinion of many lawyers, interpret our statutes correctly. I think that they should have been drafted more carefully many years ago. That's, of course, an argument long since passed. The bill that you have before you that, that Senator Curtula gave a brief explanation of, the first part of it from lines 11 through 20 say that lay out the foreclosure on a deed of trust. And then the language that's underlined says, however, if you foreclose judicially or you sue on the note, then you can't foreclose on the deed of trust. And it essentially provides a very simple option and does not subject those people in Alaska, the many, many thousands who have borrowed to what they would feel is double jeopardy, and hopefully places the law where most people felt that it was prior to the two court decisions I just noted previously.
Senator Coggio?
Madam President, that explains part of it. I guess I need to just ask one other question. When you have a contract for sale, you have usually a contract, a note, and a deed of trust. When we talk about a deed of trust here, is that, are we talking about all three documents because they're tied to the deed of trust?
Senator Rohde.
I answer the question with absolute security, but suing on the notes themselves would under the language that we have here prevent a use of the foreclosure on the deed of trust. It's essentially an option, and it would still apply in the situation that you mentioned.
Senator Ewing.
Thanks, Madam President. Maybe another question here. What about a deficiency judgment? Would a deficiency judgment still go through under the language here? In other words, could they go after the deed of trust, and could they still grant a deficiency judgment with the language that's before us?
Madam President.
Senator Rohde.
In response to my distinguished colleague from downtown Anchorage, the answer is yes. A person, and this has always been the case, and it would be unfair to change the law and would certainly disrupt our financial system. Judicial foreclosures were, for many years, the only method of foreclosure, and deficiency was allowed. Deeds of trust were used, and in exchange for the speed, the financiers gave up the ability to go after any deficiency. And it's been that choice that's been there. And that's essentially what we're going back to, is the choice that's always been there and that would remain there in the future, the ability to have a deficiency judgment.
Further discussion? Any objections to moving into third reading? Senator Eisen.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute Senate Bill 515, Judiciary, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objections, the Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 515 is before the Senate in final passage.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 515, Judiciary, an act relating to foreclosure of a deed of trust or a suit on a deed of trust note and providing for an effective date.
Discussion. Senator Curtula.
Just briefly, I think Senator Rohde brought out very, very well, and with technical knowledge, the intent of the legislation. The entire committee, however, wanted to try to give some relief to those debtors who are caught in our current economic crunch. And this is the most we could come up with, and we hope it's of some small value.
Senator Rohde.
Madam Chairman, I would note parenthetically that this would apply to all deed of trust proceedings that haven't gone to judgment on the date of that this act becomes law.
Further discussion? Question's been called. The question being, shall the Judiciary Committee substitute for Senate Bill 515 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Does any senator fail to vote? Madam Secretary, may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary, may record the vote. CS for Senate Bill 515, Judiciary, has passed the Senate by a vote of 13 yeas, 3 nays, 4 unexcused absences. Mr. Majority Leader,
Madam President, I would move the effective date clause.
Any discussion? The question is, shall the effective date clause for CS for Senate Bill 515, Judiciary, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Does any senator fail to vote? Senator Fanning? Madam Secretary, may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her votes? Madam Secretary, may record the votes. The effective date clause for CS for Senate Bill 515, Judiciary, has passed the Senate by a vote of 16 yeas, 4 unexcused absences.
Senate Bill number 411.
Senator will stand at ease. Madam Secretary, read the next item on the calendar, please.
Senate Bill number 411 by Senators Fanning, Fakes, Farron, Kemp, Fisher, Abood, Kelly, Rohde, and Coghill, enacting the use of firearms in state parks, state marine parks, state wildlife preserves, and state recreation areas. Resources Committee considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill number 411 Resources and reports it back as follows. Senator Coghill, Chairman, and Senators Fanning and Fisher signed due pass. Senators Elias and Mr. Jaluski signed no recommendation, zero fiscal note attached. Finance Committee waived referral. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendar, and the report was signed by Senator Elias and Chairman concurring. Senators Hensley, Binkley, Fake, and Jones. There is a Resources Committee substitute.
Mr. Resources, Chairman.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for Senate Bill 411 Resources be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Resources Committee substitute for Senate Bill 411 has been adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 411 Resources by the Resources Committee, an act relating to the use of firearms in state parks, state marine parks, state wildlife preserves, and state recreation areas.
Are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 411 Resources be considered engrossed, advance a third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, the Resources Committee substitute for Senate Bill 411 is before the Senate in final passage.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 411 Resources on act relating the use of firearms in state parks, state marine parks, state wildlife preserves, and state recreation areas.
Discussion. Senator Fanning.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, the legislation, I think, is fairly straightforward. It's obvious that within the enactment of ANILCA and the establishment and or expansion of Alaska's national parks, hunters in Alaska have approximately 32.4 million fewer acres of land on which they can hunt. On the other hand, this means that nearly 10% of all the land in this state is has now set aside for those who wish to avoid any conflict with hunters or their activities. Because of these huge losses, especially at primaries for big game, it's vital that we keep our state parks open to hunting so that overall impact to game species is spread out as much as possible and that conflicts on private land are kept at a minimum. It's indeed time, I think, for the legislature to reaffirm public policy in our state parks and provide for multiple recreational uses with firearm safety factor based on reason and fairness. I might mention to the co-sponsors of the legislation and others that might have been interested, the change in the Resources Committee was from the original legislation, which would have closed areas from a quarter mile, to expand it to the current park policy of a half mile for purposes of safety. The legislation is supported by the National Rifle Association, the Alaska Outdoor Council, and I think it makes good sense, and I urge the members to support the legislation.
Senator Sturgiluski.
Whatever. Madam President, I'd like to bring out a couple of additional pieces of information. Currently, regulations as adopted by Department of Natural Resources determine this question of closure. And there's an interesting problem that I see being created if this legislation is passed in this form. Within the Chugach State Park, which a large part of that is within the municipality of Anchorage and adjacent to the urban area, we have a good number of areas that are, in fact, for safety reasons, closed to hunting. And those areas are ones pretty familiar to a lot of us. The use and discharge of a firearm is prohibited within the following drainages. They get us all. Clutna River, excluding the East Fork of the Clutna River and Thunderbird Creek above Thunderbird Falls. Eagle River and all tributary drainages downstream from the gorge, and then they go into a legal description. All forks of Campbell Creek, Rabbit Creek, McHugh Creek, and Rainbow Creek. Currently, those are closed. And this legislation, just in my discussions with the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Parks, we would not be able to keep those based on public safety closed. Now, there is a potential of the, as I understand it, of the Board of Game closing certain areas. They have an area in there that deals with viewing as well as hunting, but it gets into a real muddy situation, and as I understand, again, the bottom line is this legislation would take away what has been a long process of working with the Park Advisory Board, the community of Anchorage, and so on, to develop those areas that are closed to discharge of firearms.
Further discussion. Senator Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam President. I appreciate the remarks of the senator from the Hillside, because I share some concerns with regard to this legislation. Several years ago, Senator Bennett worked on legislation, and because of his desire to and strong advocacy of firearms, I and many others have joined him. And as you know, Senator Rohde and I both are very strong advocates of not restricting individuals' rights to bear arms. But even the National Rifleman Association, which I'm a proud member of, has never sought to open up where you have a conflict with individuals and the public an area. That's one reason they've been advocates of shooting areas and rifle ranges. And in this case, I see a conflict because we're taking off the books a law which I think is responsible, or at least mending. And in this case, we have the Chugach State Park, an area that is very close to us and has at least several drainages, which are all in the upper hillside area of Anchorage, which are visited by some 940,000 visitors a year. Many of them toured groups of children and others who have the confidence to know that those trails are hiking trails, whether it's Flat Top or the South Fork of Campbell Creek or any of those areas, are not open areas for firearm use. Of the entire state park area, 3.3 million acres, 95% of that area is open for firearm use. It's only 5% of any park area that's restricted. And in those areas, it's definitely where you have conflict with the human use and a concern for human safety. And to take a broad sweep at this time to open up those areas, I think is not necessarily the public's best interest. And I can't see in good faith why we'd want to advance this legislation at this time. The advocates have indicated that a half mile is a buffer. A 22 has an effective range of 1 mile. You see it on a little 22 box. A 30-06 has effective range of approximately 5 miles. And to me, to allow this type of opening and to make this type of a policy when we've had extensive public policy meetings by user groups, park advisory groups who have not indicated a particular conflict with the current law, and if it's not fixed, don't change it, is the rule of thumb that I think we need to follow here. In 5.5 million visits to the parks last year, documented were less than one handful of complaints related to any type of firearm use. And I've certainly not received any indication from my constituency and any of the groups that this is a warranted piece of legislation. I'd encourage my colleagues to think twice before allowing it to advance.
Further discussion? Senator Coghill.
Well, Madam President, I think that this is a good bill, and I'm going to support it, and I help sponsor it. I think that we have to be aware of the fact is that there's an awful lot of Alaska lifestyle in this particular bill. I think that this is a bill that, as we creeped up the Parks Highway and we took in the Denali Park all the way up to the, you might say, to the Broad Pass Summit, that it's taken an awful lot of the opportunity for people to hunt along the Parks Highway to go back to have carry their firearms in within the park structure. And I think that as we control more of our land and as we put more of our land into parks and refuges, preserves, and et cetera, on the state level, at least we can do is to keep a little bit of the Alaska lifestyle alive in those parks.
Senator Josephson.
Madam President, I think the department's position is that they do respond to the Alaska lifestyle. They have an administrative process. They have public hearings. The regulations which they have resulted from statewide public hearings in 1984 to 85. They received public comments which had the full range from 100 yards to a mile to entire closures except for bow hunting. They are willing, and they've indicated this, to have more public meetings to assess the issue of a half-mile closure, even to a quarter-mile closure. And I think this just sort of short-circuits that public process, Madam President. I don't know if people in my area want closure, where they go to, and how conveniently they can be heard, and even if they're heard, what latitude we give the administration to respond to them. So I oppose the bill.
Madam Secretary, you note Senator Binkley's presence in the chambers, please. Senator Fanning.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I'd like to respond just to a couple of comments. I think that the bottom line here is are we going to continue to close areas to the carrying of firearms and to lawful and legal hunting activities throughout Alaska? And I don't think, in fact, I know for a fact that that's not what Alaska State Parks were when they were established, what they were created for. It was specifically thought at that time that hunting and carrying firearms, and was stated that that was a legitimate purpose of the state parks. Madam President, the previous speaker referred to extensive public hearings. And he also referred to the fact that the DNR has stated in the committee and in the letters that they sent us that they would be willing to have further public hearings to discuss whether it should be a half mile or quarter mile. Madam President, the legislation goes to the very far end of DNR's request and the public hearing request, a half mile. We automatically make it up to a half mile for public safety reasons. So the original legislation had a quarter mile, and there was debate in that. We've already acquiesced on that particular point, and for legitimate public safety purposes, we specifically allow the closure next to all trailheads and trails and roads and so forth, as you see enumerated in the legislation, closure for public safety purposes. What we're talking about is whether or not, under that guise, public safety purpose, you continue and specifically outlaw hunting in Alaska state parks. And I don't think Alaskans want that. I know that that was not the original intent of the legislation. There were three groups that testified on this legislation in opposition. They were Wildlife Alliance, Greenpeace, and the Environmental Lobby. I'd like to read a statement from the Wildlife Alliance, and this comes from the one area out of all of Alaska state parks, preserves, and refuges where we have areas today that were red, that were closed. This comes from constituents in that area. We voted a few days ago on this floor from another piece of legislation that came from that same advisory group, and we passed that and overruled that group. Here are the comments of the Wildlife Alliance. We do not think hunting activities are compatible with other public uses in state parks. Madam President, we're not talking about public safety issue here. We're talking about groups of people who want to outlaw hunting in Alaska. And this legislation very clearly allows the department its current flexibility. At the same time, makes a legislative statement that carrying firearms and hunting in state parks is, in fact, one of the purposes for which they were created. One of the remarks made reminded me of a of a United States congressman a few years ago when, in fact, he was the sponsor of the Alaska National Interest Lands Claims Act, when he said, we're still going to allow 95% of Alaska open to honey. All he did was take 32.4 million acres of the best hunting land in this state and close it. And so I'm not at all impressed by the minimal amount that's currently closed. That minimal amount is closed beyond what is necessary for public safety. That amount is closed has made it so that moose in the Eagle River closed area beyond the carrying capacity of the available browse, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologists. The sheep populations are also beyond their carrying capacities. There are grizzlies that are in some of those areas, and it's ridiculous for us to suggest that we should not allow hunting of those animals when there's no conflict with public safety, and I think that the legislation provides for that. And I would urge members to vote yes.
Senator Sturgeliski.
A couple of points. First of all, I would rise to support the comments made by the senator from South Anchorage in terms of the National Rifle Association and support. And this is ridiculous to think that we're talking here about taking away people's right to have firearms, and there's big thing against guns and parks. We have a very unique situation here. I would direct you to the legislation. Nowhere does it talk about a trail. It talks about a trailhead. Well, a trailhead has a pretty specific meaning. It also talks about a lookout on an established trail system. It does not talk about the trail, as a matter of fact, at all. And I did talk to Parks, and Parks indicated that they have removed a trail. They don't automatically close those areas. Now, on this floor, I voted, as did a number of my colleagues, asking them to go back and take a look at this issue dealing with helicopters. I don't think they should automatically be closed out of the park, and I want them to go back through the process. But I also represent a community that uses Chugach Park to a great extent, and it is not an anti-hunting issue. It is a public safety issue, and so I do disagree with the comments that have been made.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Madam President. I just have a question that may be an oversight, or I may not be understanding this right, but the concern that I get out of my district, and I support what I think this legislation is trying to do, and I believe the people in the district would probably support what this legislation is trying to do, but there seems to be something missing on the list of things, and as I understand it, the commissioner cannot close, for public safety or any other reason, anything that's not within a half a mile of this list, and the concern of my district would be that there would be no way to close hunting in the park directly adjacent to a subdivision. And I just wonder if that list should say the park boundary, because I think that can be a problem in areas in my district where the park essentially, its boundaries are not regular. They follow around private property, subdivision property, and there are high-density areas that are essentially right in the park.
Senator Duncan.
May we have it, please?
Senate will stand at ease. Senate will come back to order. We have before us a debate on CS for Senate Bill 411 resources. We are in third reading. There's an amendment being passed out. Senator Halford.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 411 be returned to second reading for purposes of a specific amendment.
Without objection, the Resources Committee substitute for Senate Bill 411 will return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment. Senator Halford. Oh, Madam Secretary, read the amendment, please.
Amendment number one by Senator Halford, page 2, line 7. Insert 10, an improved public trail, 11, a park boundary.
Senator Halford.
Madam President, I move the amendment.
Is there any discussion? The amendment has been moved.
Madam President, I'm going to ask unanimous consent, but I would, before that, like to just state that I don't believe that this list is an indication that any of these areas necessarily should be closed. However, it does provide that for reasons of public safety, any of these areas can be closed. And I believe that the list should have the two items added, an improved trail and a park boundary, because I believe there are cases where there should be closures within a half a mile of those, as well as some of the other things on the rest of the list.
Have you asked unanimous consent?
I ask unanimous consent.
Senator Curtula?
In law, in
We have here stated an improved public trail. Would you define what you intend to state by improved public trail?
Senator Halford.
For the record.
And for the record, that is certainly not a definition from a lawyer. Improved simply means that it is not something that somebody put down on a map and you can't find on the ground. Public means it's not some trapper's trail that he made, but it's actually a trail in the park. So it's improved. You can find it. It's a public trail. That's.
Do you still object, sir?
I'll withdraw.
President of the Senate.
You may maintain your objection, sir. I was just trying to move it. That's all right. I don't mean to rush you.
I will withdraw it subsequently, to just stating that those are very difficult to define. It's not an art well stated, as he's pointing out. So that's the reason I wondered if we shouldn't define it. That's more specifically, at this time, even in debate for the record. I'm going to just presume, then, that what we're stating is any public trail that a number of people go down and occasionally happens to have a little brushing out by some CC boys or something, that's an improved public trail.
Senator Abood.
Yes, just one question to the maker of the amendment. Would it take on the same meaning as an improved campsite?
Senator Coggio.
Madam President, I think that for the record, I would certainly vision an improved public trail within the park, an area that the park is publishing as a trail, that in their brochures or in that context, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about it within the park boundaries, and I think that the good senator from Eagle River has explained it. I don't have any problem with it. Would be the places that have been noticed as trails.
Is there any other objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 1? Without objection, Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are returned to third reading on CS for Senate Bill 411, Resources, as amended by the Senate. Is there further discussion? Senator Eliason.
I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for Senate Bill 411, Resources, as amended by the Senate, be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed in the final passage.
Well, the bill is already in third reading, Senator, but it's no problem, no harm done. Is there further discussion on the bill? Senator Josephson.
Madam President, the bill may have been improved, but it was characterized as giving the commissioner flexibility. It clearly does not give the commissioner flexibility. It denies all flexibility except within the designated areas, Madam President. It still substitutes legislative fiat for an administrative process. It still says that even within the designated area, the commissioner may regulate the use of firearms only for reasons of public safety. And I want to point that out, because if in an area that has competing uses, the commissioner cannot, even when there is overwhelming public support, restrict firearm use in support of those other competing uses unless there is a public safety reason. And I frankly think that there may be other uses in a park area which in a given location rational people would say ought to be paramount to hunting. And that is foreclosed unless there is a public safety rationale. I still am going to vote against 411, and I hope the bill is defeated.
Further discussion. Senator Rohde.
Madam President, I would take a different view than my distinguished colleague from downtown Anchorage, because I think with the language that Senator Halford has provided, the parks will be able to regulate wherever people use any portion of the park, there will be a safety concern, and wherever there is a problem, the commissioner will be able to approve the appropriate regulation that will protect those people and provide for the reasonable use of firearms in a park. I think that the amendment may even have gone further than I wish, because I think we're really talking about a small portion of Chugach State Park as a problem, and as someone once noted, that hard cases make bad law, and that may be true, but certainly with this language, I think that we'll find more than adequate protection for the public in the area that I'm concerned about, particularly particularly in Nestruget State Park.
Further discussion. Senator Szymanski.
Well, I was doing pretty good until my minority leader and I decided to disagree on this one. And let me just say that while I agree that there have been improvements by the amendments, I still stand before you in opposition to the legislation because it's, again, a good example of where in this body we saw a particular concern, and the good senator from Eagle River's concerns were related to his boundary of constituency that are sitting there and wondering about their house that may be bordered on maybe two sides or three sides by a park, and the person can say, well, I'm not standing on your property. I can discharge a firearm or hunt. The problem I have is that in the hillside area, particularly in, again, the South Fork or Middle Fork of Campbell Creek or the Flat Top Trail system, you've got many trails that you could conceivably, very easily, find yourself within an area of hunting or discharging a firearm where you're within the half mile, or you're outside the half mile boundary, but you're still within a mile, three quarters of a mile, of a house, of homes, and where campgrounds are, or picnic areas, and kids are, and somebody can innocently said, I followed the intent of the law when I killed that kid because I discharged a firearm to meet the state law, but that's going to be a bad eulogy when we're sitting there wondering why we didn't restrict them or give the power to the parks people to restrict them when there is a conflict between the public and the discharge of a firearm. And because of that, I'll be voting against this bill.
Question. Further discussion.
Question.
Question being, shall CS for Senate Bill 411, Resources, amended Senate, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary may record the vote. CS for Senate Bill 411, Resources, amended Senate, has passed the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas, 6 nays. Madam Secretary, read the next item on the calendar, please.
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 521, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to open containers of alcoholic beverages and motor vehicles. Committee on Regional Affairs waived referral. Judiciary Committee considered the bill and reports the back as follows. Senator Krutula signed no recommendation. Senator Sturgiloski and Josephson signed no recommendation. House, zero fiscal note. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendar. The report was signed by Senator Elias and Chairman. Concurring Senators Binkley and Jones. I have amendment number one by Senator Fahrenkamp, and it has been passed out.
Does everyone have amendment number one? It's a long two-page amendment, Senator Fahrenkamp.
Mr. President, I move amendment number one.
Amendment number one has been moved. You wish to speak to it, Senator?
Yes, Madam President. Many times, and I think many of you remember the, well, we are fortunate enough to have the Council of State Governments in Fairbanks, and I hope we will have them again. We'll be back in 90. But what we're doing here is saying, it was my impression, and the impression with talking with the sponsor, the impression is to try to get around those people who have or driving cars with open containers in those cars. And what we're trying to get at is the driver, not necessarily, in every case, the passenger. I think this amendment is very self-explanatory. What it would do is allow then the, among other things, when you're in a commercial vehicle, the driver is hired. Commercial vehicle definition is on starting on number two down at the bottom of the first page. And if you have an open vehicle, an open container in your trunk of your car, that'd be excused. I traveled with a friend occasionally whose son collects beer bottles. We bring back empty beer bottles. I couldn't even get in the car with that under the law the way it's passed as we get off the airport to go back to our residents. So I would ask support for the amendment.
Discussion on amendment number one.
Unanimous consent.
Ask unanimous consent.
Yes, I do.
Without objection, amendment number one is passed the Senate. Is there additional amendments?
Amendment number two by Senator Coghill, and this has been passed out. It's a three-page amendment.
Senator Coghill, do you wish to move your amendment?
Madam President, I move the amendment.
Amendment number two has been moved. A discussion, sir. Senator Coghill.
Madam President, what we're doing in this amendment is this amendment makes the person that possesses the bottle or the open container the liable person. It also addresses into on item four, on the third page, item three, was in possession of alcohol visual while driving a motor vehicle is in violation. And what we have here, Madam President, is that first, we do not hold innocent parties responsible for others' actions. Supposing that you were to pick up a neighbor's son, and he's hitchhiking home, and you take him home, and for some reason you either get stopped and you find it in his knapsack, or, as far as that goes, in his briefcase where there was a partly open bottle. At this particular point, the driver is the one that's responsible for it. The same rationale would be that if you're willing to take an intoxicated person home and keep him from hurting himself and others, you have the risk of being punished because supposing you're going to frisk him and see if he's got a flask on his person. I think that this amendment, if you look at it in its full context, is what we're doing here is that we're changing the responsibility back to the person that might have the open bottle.
Discussion on amendment number two. Senator Halford.
Thank you, Madam President. Is it correct that essentially amendment number two deletes all the language we just added in amendment number one? Or is it?
Well, it's not included because amendment number one hadn't been passed when he created amendment number two. Would it, in fact, Madam Secretary, delete the language we just adopted, amendment number one?
I assume so.
Yes. So it has to be rewritten in a different format. Senator Halford?
Well, that's, the way I read it, we just added a new section on page one, lines 16 through 22, and on page one, line 25, and this says delete all material on page one, line 9, which is essentially after the title, and replace it with another bill.
Senator Kelly.
It is kind of confusing. Maybe the solution would be to get a new draft of the new amended version, and then Senator Coghill could look at that, redraft his amendment to the amended version, bring it back tomorrow.
Senator Fearnkamp.
Madam President, I was a question to the sponsor of amendment number two. With amendment number one adopted, I'm trying to find what portion of his amendment is still necessary. Because if in amendment number one, there's the bottle is in a receptacle. I don't know whether a briefcase would be considered a receptacle, but.
Senator
Coghill. Mr. V, respond. Substantially, I would have no problem in accepting a part of the Section B. If you'll see my amendment, I also go into Section A, and I say a person may not possess an open bottle, and or an open bottle can or other receptacle. The bill is a person may not drive a motor vehicle on the highway or vehicular way when there is an open bottle. I think that it has a whole different context. And I would be more than willing that if you wanted to hold it in second reading, Madam President, get a new draft and then to put the put our amendment in. I wouldn't have any problem with that if that's the will of the body.
Senator Fahrenkamp.
Madam President, in looking at the section C of the amendment on page 1, seems to take care of the meat of what he's saying. So if the sponsor would like to look at that as he looks at the amendment.
Senate will stand at ease. We are debating CS for House Bill 521, Judiciary, amended Senate. We have under discussion Amendment Number 2, Senator Coghill.
Madam President, in order to get the bill moving, I'm going to withdraw my amendment, but I will be reconsidering the bill when it passes the Senate so that I can take a look at the amended bill as offered by Amendment Number 1, and then I will reconsider whether I need to amend it. So
without objection, Amendment Number 2 has been withdrawn. Are there further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Senator Lyson.
Madam President, I move to ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 521, Judiciary, amended by the Senate, be considered engrossed, advance the third reading, and place in final passage.
Without objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 521, amended Senate, is before the Senate in final passage.
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 521, Judiciary, amended Senate, an act relating to open containers of alcoholic beverages in motor vehicles.
Discussion.
Question
has been called. The question being, shall the committee substitute for House Bill 521, Judiciary, amended Senate, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Is any member failed to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary, you may record the vote. CS for House Bill 521, Judiciary, has passed the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas, 6 nays. Senator Coghill.
Madam President, I give notice of my reconsideration on House Bill, Committee Substitute for House Bill 521, Judiciary.
So noted, sir. Madam Secretary, will you read the next item on the calendar, please?
Senate Bill Number 186, an act limiting the scope and content of regulations adopted under the Administrative Procedure Act and providing for an effective date, held from April the 30th in third reading.
We are in third reading. We are under debate on Senate Bill 186. Question has been called. The question being, shall Senate Bill 186 pass the Senate? Senator Halford?
Just
we're in the, void the vote, please. Senator Halford?
Madam President, there was a lot of debate on this legislation when it was before us yesterday.
I realize
that. I want the members to at least find it in their packet before they vote on it.
Senator Josephson.
Madam President.
Welcome to the Senate, Senator Josephson.
I appreciate the Senator's courtesy. I'm advised that there are, in addition to the problems we discussed yesterday, that there are several areas where federal regulations are designed to leave matters to the discretion of states. Hazardous waste facility sightings come to my mind, as an area where Alaska has developed regulations which are now in the Attorney General's office for review. This was done at the request of this legislature by resolution, Madam President. Drilling muds, the federal government exempts drilling muds from their regulations, leave them to states. We've developed regulations working with industry. We cite our regulations in the ANWR debate in Congress to demonstrate that drilling will take place in an environmentally safe manner. EPA, studying drilling muds, concluded that the regulations should be left to states and points to our regulations as a good example. Solid waste disposal, the federal government has broad authority but leaves specific management to the states. Other examples are open burning, oil spill prevention, plan reviews for water and wastewater sites. The state often then fills in gaps in the federal regulations to apply them to local conditions, and I think the senator from Kotzebue yesterday talked about how we need some specific, more tight regulations because of climatic conditions and otherwise. So I hope that SB 186 is rejected for all the reasons we discussed yesterday, Madam President.
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, I hear the good senator from downtown Anchorage, and I think that all of his arguments have got one big hole in them, and that is that all of the language on line 18 and 19 are covered in this bill. Unless authorized by state law, a regulation on a matter that is also subject to federal regulation, it doesn't leave a void. If there's no federal regulation on it, the state's got perfectly open country on it. The thing is, what we're trying to do, and most of the state regulation by the Administrative Procedure Act has to, first of all, have some kind of enabling legislation. Has to have an authorization by the legislature. I think we're building a big spook out of this particular piece of legislation. All we're doing is saying you've got to be able to have state law authorization before you go beyond those guidelines that were set down by the federal agencies.
Senator Ewing.
It's an under discussion. So it's my understanding that before any kind of a federal regulation could essentially go through and the state would adopt it, is that we would have to pass a law to make it happen, specifically addressing that particular regulation. Is that correct?
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, to go beyond the scope of that federal regulation, yes, we would have to pass a law. And who are the lawmakers in this state? The legislature.
Senator Josephson.
Thank you, Madam President. Last year, the Attorney General advised that this provision would cover a great range of subjects, from air and water quality to asbestos and occupational safety standards, to prevailing wage rates, to federally funded public works projects such as highways and so forth. For example, talk about not only prevailing wages, talk about minimum wages. Is the intent that the federal minimum wage law now applies in lieu of our statutory minimum wage? Are we only talking about regulations as opposed to statutes? The effect would be to allow the federal government to set a whole range of standards for Alaska without allowing the state to tailor the requirements to a higher and more appropriate local standard. The phrase, unless authorized by state law, is included, but for a number of existing statutorily covered subjects, the general prohibition would apply until the legislature takes action to amend a variety of existing statutes. It is quite possible for the legislature to overlook this provision when enacting some new program, so there is the potential for some difficulty if this amendment were to pass. Madam President, a year ago, the Fish and Game Department's report said that this limitation will preclude active state management of its fish, game, and aquatic resources, essentially transferring management responsibility to the federal government for those activities currently under concurrent state and federal regulation. Specific activities affected include subsistence hunting and fishing, migratory waterfowl hunting, endangered and threatened species, and commercial fishing activities beyond the state's 3-mile limit. The measure may limit or potentially preclude state administration and or active participation in the federal programs established under the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, Clean Air Act, Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, Anadromous Fish Conservation Act, Endangered Species Act, the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, the Noise Control Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, and the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Madam President.
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, everything that the good senator from downtown Anchorage has read off there is more reason why we should have this bill. More reason why we should be aware in the legislative halls of all of the rules and all of the regulations and all of the administrative law that's going to be put upon our people. And this is the way we do it. We say, unless that we do not want the rulemakers to exceed the authority of the lawmakers in this state. And that's what this bill does.
Senator Ewing.
I have a problem with the bill. I think that it sets the authority back to the legislature, and they have to act on it. I think that was what was alluded to in the senator from downtown's attorney general's opinion, that we would have to act on it before it actually could occur. So we'd put the authority back on the legislature, and we could do whatever we wanted with it, I assume.
Senator Josephson.
I leave this body with mixed emotions. You know, I have great regret about leaving my friends here and the interesting work. But if you're going to be really next year devoting yourself to reviewing all these regulations and deciding what you're going to restore and where the discrepancies are and what it means to be authorized and what is tougher. I mean, in an example, I don't have, this is a hypothetical example, but in an example talking about housing standards where a federal regulation says that you need plywood that's 3/4 inches and we say 1/2 inches, but they say that their windows have to be can be smaller than ours are, which is the more stringent one. I mean, you're going to have to decide all that, or somebody's going to have to unravel that. So I leave that terrific job to you, my friend, and wish you well with it, because you're going to be here on special sessions, I can tell you, 1989.
Senator Fearnkamp.
Madam President, I've carried many pieces of legislation through this body concerning regulations, and never once. We have one in CNRA right now. They've been going on around here for 10 years. Never once have we gotten support for any effort on the part of the legislature to get any control of regs that go beyond what was intended. And when we start saying we'll have to review everything there's a statute on, the bill clearly states unless handled by statute. I've had so many letters from Environmental Protection and others that say, we could do this, and it could do that, and it might do this, and it should do that. But then the very next year, in our management plans, the number 2 section of it would be exactly what we tried to get passed in the legislature, that they said, if you do that, you'll lose all control. So this coulds and woulds and shoulds and mights don't affect me one little bit, as I gladly punch the green button.
Senator Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam President. I think that the sponsors probably, as I indicated in debate a couple days ago, have good intentions, but I wish they would have restricted it to a simple area, an area that they're more concerned with, and one that probably is not as sweeping as this. But I read from the sponsors' memorandum to the State Affairs Committee, and it's interesting wording, because I think it embodies his feeling and his commitment. And it says, in essence, Section 1, SB 186, would require that unless authorized by state law, and he said that 2 or 3 times, a regulation adopted under this chapter may not limit the activities or choices available on a matter also subject to federal regulation to an extent greater than minimum federal requirements. In other words, comma, the sponsor believes the federal regulations are sufficiently stringent to protect Alaska's best interest on matters where state and federal regulations apply. Simply put, I'm not buying it.
Thank you, Senator.
The federal regulations are not my mandate, and I'm not of the belief that we're going to turn the federal government into being our new dictator. And I'm not buying off on it. The federal regulations that have come down over the years are not in our best interest, and sufficiently stringent in some cases to protect our land, our water, and our fishing game. So it's real clear to me that if you want to go back in history, we had a battle one time and a vote on it when we got into statehood. And it's the same old problem. We've got the federal government now looking better to us in some areas, so all of a sudden we want to pass a sweeping law to embrace the federal government regulations. I'm not buying off on it.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Madam President. Simply to respond to the senator from South Anchorage, it's basically our call. We can, if we want to take the call and take the action, we can do it. If we don't, we don't have to do it, and that's all this does.
Senator Josephson.
Madam President, yesterday I watched Senator Murkowski talk about the trade bill, and maybe some of you saw that on C-SPAN, and he talked about the discrimination practiced against Alaska in the trade bill in terms of refining export of refined products. And he was right. What the Congress did was outrageous and very objectionable to every Alaskan, I'm sure. And we need to give the best arguments we can in that forum in Washington, D.C., and we need to be very aggressive and very strong. Now the proposition, though, in the midst of the ANWR debate, is that we're going to take arrows out of the quiver of our representatives in Washington. We're going to, instead of being in the position of saying, that we're an environmentally conscious community, and in some cases we have adopted regulations that go beyond the federal regulations. We're now going to be in the position, and boy, we are giving in to all the stereotypes of the people who want to keep Alaska down, in my opinion. We're now giving them the argument that the legislature has erased every regulation that is deemed to be more stringent than federal regulations. Do you really want to do that? I mean, do you really want to go back and argue the ANWR case and the Alaska case generally in Congress with that kind of a premise? Or do you want to be able to say that we remain committed to a good environment and we're going to make more stringent regulations where we Alaskans think that's the appropriate thing to do? Now, I realize, of course, if you want to get very subtle about it, and if the concentration span of congressmen will let you do that, that you can say, well, we really didn't do that because we intend to go back and take a look at each regulation and see if we want to make it stronger or not. But I believe that it's an unwise thing to do, and it takes from a PR point of view in the nation's capital, it's a disastrous thing to do.
Further discussion, Senator Halford.
I'm sorry I asked about this bill that we weren't going to discuss.
No, you aren't.
Question.
I don't believe it. Question's been called. The question being, shall Senate Bill 186 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Does any senator fail to vote? Madam Secretary, may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary, you may record the vote. Senate Bill 186 has failed to pass the Senate by a vote of 7 yeas, 13 nays. Next item on the calendar, please. Senator Curtillo.
I give notice of my intent to reconsider my vote on SB 411 next legislative day.
Thank you, sir. SB 411 has been noticed of reconsideration. Madam Secretary, read next item on the calendar, please.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 292, Committee on Rules and Affairs, an act authorizing compensation for members of the State Local Boundary Commission and providing for an effective date before the Senate on reconsideration held from April 30th.
We have Senate Bill 292 before us on third reading. Is there discussion? Senator Sturgiolowski.
Madam President, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Without objection, we will return to second reading for the purposes of specific amendments for CS for Senate Bill 292, Labor and Commerce. Madam Secretary, read the amendment.
Amendment number one by Senator Sturgiolowski, page 1, line 14. Delete the words, or in travel to or from the meeting.
Senator Sturgiolowski, you wish to move the amendment.
Madam President, I would move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment as proposed.
Without objection, amendment number one has been adopted. This brings the bill automatically before us in third reading. Is there discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. The question being, shall CS for Senate Bill 292 CNRA as amended by the Senate pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Madam Secretary, may lock the rolls. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary, may record the vote. CS for Senate Bill 292 CNRA as amended by the Senate has passed the Senate by a vote of 13 yeas, 7 nays. Mr.
Date clause.
Any discussion on the moving of the effective date clause? The question being, shall the effective date clause for CS for Senate Bill 292 Labor and Commerce pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Any member failed to vote? Madam Secretary, may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary, may record the vote. The effective date is passed by a vote of 20 to 0. Senator Sturgiolowski.
Brief at ease, please.
Senate will stand at ease. Order, please. The Senate will come back to order. Do we have unfinished business? Senator Kelly. Senator Coghill, unfinished business.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the referral, that the Resources Committee be allowed to waive the referral on Senate Bill 455, an act relating to the safety equipment for commercial fishing vessels and providing for an effective date.
Without objection, the referral on Senate Bill 455, an act dealing with safety equipment on fishing vessels, will be waived from the Resources Committee. Senator Cargill?
Madam President, I looked at House Bill 394, and I understand that it's going to be going to Labor and Commerce, who dealt with this bill. It has to do with electric telephone co-ops. And so I will move and ask unanimous consent the Resources Committee referral be waived on House Bill 394, an act relating to electric and telephone cooperatives.
Without objection, the referral on House Bill 394, dealing with an act dealing with electrical and telephone co-ops and cooperatives, will be waived from the Resources Committee. Senator Kelly, you had unfinished business?
No.
Unfinished business. Senator Hensley.
May we have an at ease, please?
Senate will stand at ease. Senator Kelly.
Move to announcements, please, before any other announcements.
Under announcement, Senator Kelly, yes,
Madam President,
sir.
The Conference Committee on Senate Bill 322, Workers' Compensation, will meet tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the Bill's Committee Room.
Conference Committee on Workman's Comp, tomorrow. Senator Halford.
Madam President, back at unfinished business.
Unfinished business, sir, without objection.
Madam President, I move that the Finance Committee referral on Senate Bill 492 Hess, that's relating to the practice of naturopathy or naturopathy, be waived from the Finance Committee. It is in another committee referral. Doesn't have any fiscal note in it. Apparently it's going to get heard and moved out of that committee.
Is this a Senate bill or a House bill, sir?
It's a Senate bill.
The referral on Senate Bill 492 dealing with naturopathy or naturopathy will
right.
be waived from the Finance Committee.
Right.
Further announcements? Announcements. Senator Fanning.
Thank you, Madam President. This is a matter of information to the members of the body that may not have noticed. While we've been passing legislation the last couple of hours, they're right across the street. If you'll stick your head out the door, you'll see that there's been two houses constructed in that period of time, and it's pretty unique design and new to Alaska for various types of rural housing and remote area locations. So if you haven't had a chance to see those, I suggest you stick your head out the door and see what happens.
Senator Cargill.
Madam President, it's been requested that a majority caucus will be called at 4 in the Butrovich Room. 4.
Further announcements? Special orders? Senator Kelly.
Return back to announcements, please.
Without objection, Senator, we'll return to announcements.
Madam President, if we're going to have a majority caucus at 4, my guess is that my committee will not be able to meet after that time, so
Would 5 o'clock be better for you, sir?
4:30 would be better for my
committee. 4:30, majority caucus is fine. Thank you, Senator Kelly,
for 4:30.
Special orders, Senator Eliason.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 3rd, 1988.
Without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 3rd.